You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Just about a week to go until pitchers and catchers report to spring training, so let's take a look at how the team fared in the offseason. I am Allison Fritter from MLB.com, and in the NL West, there were a lot of changes for a lot of teams, and there are some teams that did maybe a little bit better in the offseason competition than others, but certainly the Giants, Dodgers, and the Diamondbacks will probably be the three teams to keep an eye on as the season progresses. Ken, before we get into looking back at the Dodgers offseason, let's cover a little bit of news in that Howie Kendrick has officially signed back with the Dodgers. It sounds like this might be fluid as far as where exactly he fits into the infield.
Yeah, you know, you would think that he would get his starting second base job back. He didn't really do anything wrong to deserve to lose it, but nobody would say that it's his. They said that with him and Shea Sutley and Justin Turner coming off knee surgery, that there would be some sort of rotation and there would be plenty of at-bats for all of them. I'm not quite sure why they were hesitant to say that. Maybe they might have made some sort of assurance to Utley. They sure gave him a lot of money, $7 million, all he was going to be is a backup. And I think really what it comes down to is they weren't planning to re-sign Howie Kendrick. They kind of got backed into it, and not that it's a bad thing necessarily, but I think that they were pretty sure he was gone, figured that he would get a multi-year deal, and they were looking forward to getting a draft pick, and things just didn't work out that way, so they brought him back.
So, yeah, Kendrick was pretty outspoken, I guess, about how that whole system works. It's like you said, he wasn't happy with the way the free agency treated him, but he was glad to be back with the Dodgers, so... He's kind of a representative of some of the way that the system might not be working so well for the players, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a complicated free agency system, and, you know, I understand why he's disappointed, but, you know, that's the risk you take when you reject that qualifying offer. You better make sure that you've got a robust market out there to do better than that, and, you know, for a variety of reasons, he didn't have that. And he thought he did, and he didn't. And it was a miscalculation on his part. You know, a lot of things sometimes go against the team, a miscalculation on their part. And you got to deal with the consequences. It's a decision just like any decision that any of us make, a financial decision. And, you know, you hope for the best, and you try to minimize the chances of it going off the rails. But this one didn't work out the way that he wanted.
Okay, so let's look back at the Dodgers offseason and kind of see what they lost, what they gained, and what they still might need to figure out as spring training starts. But obviously we want to start with the rotation. I mean, it was clearly a very tumultuous offseason for this rotation and a lot of changes. And really what it comes down to is they lose Greinke and they gain Kazmir, Maeda, and possibly Ryu if he can snap back from that injury. So, when you look at this rotation, how do you feel about it? Is it still kind of TBD because of the new guys in there?
Well, you know, it's deeper than last year, but it's not as good up at the top. You know, there's no way to replace Greinke. You know, you can get all the three and four starters you want, and you don't replace basically an ace, you know, a guy who almost won the Cy Young Award. So, you know, I think they're putting the best spin on it, that it's better than last year because it's deeper. And I would disagree because I think that there's in addition to the actual performance on the field and the stats, there's a psychological advantage you have when you got Kershaw and Greinke about to go into a series, and the other team knows that basically it's going to lose two games. And they don't have that anymore, no matter how many third or fourth starters they get. So, you know, I think they made the best of a bad situation. Anytime you lose a Zach Greinke, it's a bad situation. And when you lose it to a division rival that's kind of determined to catch you, it's a worse situation, and that's where they are.
Okay, so let's move to the bullpen. Just on its face, I mean, there have been a lot of issues kind of with the bullpen in the last few years, but also a lot of stability, too. So when you look at the overall, the way it could shake out, obviously spring training is going to determine something. But do you see it as a strength?
Well, I think it's probably no better or worse than it was a year ago. You know, and like most bullpens, you know, they have their ups and downs. You know, they've got a really good closer in Kenley Jansen, and they have, you know, they've struggled to come up with a bridge to get to him. And, you know, kind of the tone of the offseason is they kept trying to do things and they didn't work out. And one of the things they tried to do was get Chapman to be kind of a double closer the way they had a double ace in Kershaw and Greinke. And they don't have Greinke, and they didn't get Chapman either. So they really haven't proven that they've rebuilt that part of the bullpen. They got Joe Blanton, who kind of reinvented himself in 2 months with the Pirates and was really outstanding. But you know, no offense to Joe Blanton, but he's not Chapman. So you know, again, it's another example of I think they've tried to address things, but their first choice, obviously, they haven't gotten either in the rotation or in the bullpen.
Chris, we are going to dissect the Giants' offseason. And they had quite a nice offseason, on paper, of course. And as we know, they don't play games on paper. But I would like to kind of just dissect a little bit, go from position to position, and just see how we might grade these guys from last season until now. So, of course, we want to start with this revamped rotation. We have talked about it a lot, but let's talk about it a little bit more. So I would think that if you look at the Giants as a whole, that's got to be one of the more positive areas that the Giants have improved.
Allison, you would think so. I mean, they've got two potential power arms there with Jeff Samardzija and Johnny Cueto. And not that they just throw, you know, rear back and throw 100 miles an hour. They know how to move the ball around, especially Cueto, who's got a little bit of Louis Tiant, Pedro Martinez. Maybe that's, you know, an extreme comparison, given that, you know, Pedro's the Hall of Famer. But, you know, he can, you know, alter his motion without, you know, messing up his own pitches and throw at different speeds. A very polished pitcher. You know, Jeff Samardzija has shown flashes of being you know, all-star caliber guy in the past, and the Giants hope that pitching in AT&T Park, which of course is friendly for pitchers, with its spacious dimensions, can help him maybe you know, get over the hump a little bit. And with their arrival as free agents, that pushes Jake Peavy and Matt Kane back to the fourth and fifth spots in the rotation, maybe not in that order, but you know, if you're low-hanging fruit, as a hitter once, to use a phrase a hitter once used on me, is Jake Peavy and Matt Cain, I think your pitching staff's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, so we haven't really, my mind is a little fuzzy on Peavy and Cain. So remind me, I mean, going into spring training, it looks pretty good for them health-wise, right?
I'm sorry?
Peavy and Cain, just health-wise going into spring training. I can't remember the last time we talked
Peavy should be at full strength. Of course, he's getting older, and he's, you know, he needs to you know, get a motor scooter to push the ball across the plate at 90 miles an hour or above. But he gets guys out. You know, if I had I would take my chance with a whole pitching rotation of guys like Jake Peavy. They may get their brains beat now once in a while, but for the most part, you know, you're going to see solid intelligence, aggressive in its own way, you know, challenging pitching. Matt Cain happens, you know, who's had arm problems most of the last couple of years, pitched 5 shutout innings in his final start of the 2015 season, and that gave the Giants a lot of hope that maybe better things lay ahead for him.
So if you're grading them based on how they ended 2015, and obviously the Giants they cratered a little bit toward the end of the year for many different reasons, mainly because key players were not available. But would you say, just from a rotation standpoint, from looking at how they ended the year, going into this season, what kind of grade would you give this rotation? And I know that's hard to say because the two main guys that we're talking about, they haven't even been Giants yet. But, you know, just a general grade on the rotation, what would you give them?
Well, I'd go with, as you said earlier on paper, I'd go with A-, maybe a B+. A-, B+. I got a lot of plenty of B pluses in school, but so I know one when I see one. They've upgraded. They've definitely upgraded. I mean, they were kind of in the middle of the pack last year. And, with Madison Bumgarner, number one, probably Quatel, number two, Smart, number three, and, Kane and PV in some kind of order there at four and five. Now, they've got, they can go into just about any series and have a, match up well with any other club.
So we talked a lot in the offseason just about what do they need, what are their needs, what are the holes they have to fill. And now that they have Denard's fan, it takes my line of questioning away a little bit because they filled that need. Is there anything left to do? Are they pretty much set? Do you think that they feel pretty comfortable going into spring with what they have right now?
Yeah, they feel comfortable. I think they still need a bullpen arm. And they wouldn't, a veteran guy who can play the kind of role that Jeremy Affeldt did the last several years. Of course, they won't get somebody quite of that caliber because those guys who are that good, who can get right-hand hitters and left-hand hitters out and throw left-handed at about 93 miles an hour. Guys like that are signed already. So you kind of have to pick anybody up like that off the scrap heap. But if they can get it, they've got an increasingly young bullpen with guys like Hunter Strickland, and Josh Osich. If they can pick up a veteran arm to complement those two guys, I think that'd be wise.
So you think that from the way that they ended last year, bullpen-wise, that they probably have taken a bit of a step back? That Affeldt loss is big. I mean, we've talked about it, those are the kinds of guys that don't get a lot of attention until you take them out of the equation. So I guess they did probably take a little bit of a step back.
A lot of fans especially I've never heard players or anybody on the coaching staff say anything negative about Santiago Casilla, the closer. I mean, for me, 38 out of 44, and that's off the top of my head, his saves, his saves and conversions, whatever. I'll take 38 out of 44 every year for my closer. But a lot of fans are really unhappy with the guy. And, the bullpen is good. It's just not, I wouldn't say it's shutdown good. Like, if the Giants get to the seventh inning with a lead, I don't know if it's necessarily a sure thing that they're going to win. Whereas with a lot of teams, especially championship teams, postseason teams, you get to the seventh, if they get to the seventh inning with a lead, the other team just, saws its bats in half. But they know they're not going to come back. But I think with the Giants, if you can maybe... It's a vulnerable bullpen. So it's still a good bullpen. I mean, Sergio Romo is one of the club's better relievers of all time. And you can say the thing about Javier Lopez, even though he's a Lukey. He's a really good Lukey. But they can be vulnerable, that's for sure.
We want to go over some news. So the Padres just signed Skip Schumacher to a minor league deal. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's just kind of an interesting potential piece for them. A guy that's been certainly in the big leagues for a while, came up with the Cardinals, won a World Series with him, I believe, in 2011. Has some versatility, and his game really sets up, for being especially at this point in his career, he's 36, so kind of a National League bench piece, a guy that could play some second base, play some outfield, can pinch hit. He had more pinch hits last year than anybody else in baseball. And let's not forget, he's also a very good clubhouse guy. And I think that's something this team, frankly, can use and needs. I know it was something they probably could have used last year a little bit. Just a guy that's kind of been through the rigors, been through the wars a little bit, and knows when to, put an arm around a guy and when to, hit another guy on the bottom and say, hey, let's get going. So I think, especially on a minor league deal, again, there's not a whole lot of risk involved here, but I think he could potentially offer the team something. He has to make the team first, of course, but I think this could be a decent fit.
Yeah, this is one of those the logical signings. I mean, a team needs options. And to just kind of stockpile a little bit of depth going into spring training, because you have to have, more of a choice, I guess, to look at to decide how they want to put together a team. And so this just adds to the options, which is important this time of year.
Yeah, because, Allison, we'll get down to the end of March here, and you and I will be talking about, player X and player Y who gone down with some sort of injury, and maybe it's not catastrophic, but, you have to build in some insurance somewhere, and you have to have some depth, and especially for a guy that does have some versatility to his game that could potentially help you in a couple of different spots if you get in the pinch. The last thing you want to do the last week of spring training and early April is to go out looking for position players. I mean, the rosters are pretty much locked. Everybody kind of has their guys, and it's kind of slim picking. So this is probably a nice deal for him because he's from Torrance, which is right up the road from San Diego in the L.A. area. And, I imagine this is probably his last go-around, but it sounds like he's got a little bit left in the tank.
Okay, good. So let's move on to just looking over the Padres offseason a little bit. Maybe just reading it a little bit or seeing what they might still need. So let's look at the rotation. There's not, any big acquisitions, largely the same cast of characters. Lyle Spencer, who is one of our esteemed colleagues and columnists, he had an interesting column recently about five pitchers from the NL West that could maybe have a breakout season, be a difference maker for their teams. Andrew Cashner mentioned for the Padres. And I guess that would be the guy that we'd have to look at to sort of maybe be a possibility to have a breakout year, considering his tools and everything that he brings. He just kind of needs to bring it together.
Yeah, and for them to have any kind of chance at all in what now appears to be one of the toughest divisions in baseball, at least on paper, especially with the changes a lot of teams have made in the National League West, they're going to need Andrew Cashner to pitch a lot better than he did last year. We kick around the importance of wins and losses and really what that means. But, he struggled last year and, he had a lot of bad defense behind him at times. But, he'll be the first to tell you that, the onus of what happened in 2015 squarely on his shoulders. He just needs to get back to being the dominant pitcher that we've seen him be before. He did make a career-high 31 starts. That was a step forward for him in his career. But, it's his last year before free agency, and I think, for his overall good financially and, for the good of the team this year, they need for him to be a lot better. You feel pretty good about your chances with James Shields and Tyson Ross at the top. He has some questions on the back end of the bullpen, but you really need Andrew Cashner to be a dependable number three.
Yeah, so I've been asking reporters to sort of grade certain areas, like judging from the end of 2015, and maybe going into spring training, has it improved? Just kind of grading from there. But I guess from in terms of the Padres rotation, this would be kind of a push at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They did lose Ian Kennedy, of course. He signed a free agent deal with the Royals, so they'll have to replace his innings and his durability. And one of the guys they're really looking toward is Brandon Mauer, who came over from the Mariners last year. Had been a starter with the Mariners, pitched very well in relief for the Padres, and there was some thought to keeping him there, but I think they want to let him be a starter. They'll give him a chance in spring training. Carlos Villanueva, a veteran who's been around a lot, had a kind of career revival last year at age 32 with the Cardinals. He's going to get a chance to start. It's going to be a lot of open competition in camp. They have a ton of relievers. You got some competition for the back end of the bullpen, a couple things on the position end, but, people always complain, Allison, maybe it's just sports writers, that spring training's too long, and it's merely a function for pitchers to get ready. But I think the Padres are really going to need all 6 weeks to get their 25-man roster figured out.
So let's move over to the bullpen. We've touched on it a little bit. Would you say it's improved? Of course, they have a very established name as their closer. We're not exactly sure what Rodney's going to be able to do at his advanced age, but he is somebody who stands out there. How do you grade the bullpen?
Yeah, I think on paper it's not nearly as good as it was a year ago, especially where you had Joaquin Benoit setting up Craig Kimbrell. Even though Craig Kimbrell didn't have a Craig Kimbrell kind of year, he still strikes a lot of fear in hitters and, got a lot of saves. And
did some good things, and Benoit had another good year, continues to defy time and all that, and did really well. So you lost those two guys, and they're going to be very difficult to replace. Fernando Rodney, of course, had his big struggles in Seattle, resurfaced with the Cubs, and the Padres feel like he's still got something left. You know, he's 36, Allison. And you have a lot of question marks. You have some Rule 5 guys down in the bullpen, three of them, and just a lot of unknowns. So, no, I would say the bullpen's not nearly as good as it was a year ago, and that's always kind of been the feather in the cap for the Padres. So they've got their work cut out for them this spring.
Steve, before we look at the offseason in review, so to speak, let's talk about another pretty impressive signing of the Diamondbacks, so signing Tyler Clipper to a two-year deal. That really has to give a boost to this team.
Yeah, Allison, you know, just when you think they're done making moves, and I think to a certain extent they even might have thought they were done making moves, there was still this one nagging part of the team they wanted to improve, and that was the bullpen. They like some of the younger arms that they have down there to choose from to fill some spots, but when they couldn't pass up the opportunity to have somebody with Tyler Clipper's experience pitching later in games, and they were able to reach a two-year agreement with him. So it feels like, you know, that was kind of like the final piece that they wanted to kind of put together, and seemed like they were not going to be able to do it. And then lo and behold, you know, just over a week before pitchers and catchers are set to report, they pull it off.
Yeah. So, Brad Ziegler currently is still the closer. So, Clipper kind of, does he just fit into that setup role?
Yeah. Clipper's going to pitch in a variety of different roles, I guess, late in the game. He talked on a conference call today about how he's comfortable pitching in a number of different roles. He didn't set out to be a closer only, so that wasn't like a condition of his signing. He feels like a strong bullpen is going to need guys that can pitch in the eighth, the seventh, really all over the place. And he's a guy, though, that Chip Hale's probably going to use in the eighth inning, seventh inning, that kind of thing. And maybe even to close when Brad Ziegler needs a break, if he's pitched a few days in a row or whatever the case might be. So, but for right now, Brad Ziegler is going to go into the season. At least that's their plan, to be the closer.
Okay, so now we're going to look at the offseason in review. Obviously, the Diamondbacks had a really good one, so this will be a fun conversation. Very active, and I don't know that anybody was anticipating they'd be this active, but as soon as those winter meetings started, man, they were off and running. So I guess we'll state the very, very obvious. So save your emails, Diamondbacks fans. We know this is very obvious. The rotation has improved quite a bit, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would, Allison. It's, again, amazing. Nobody expected them to get Zach Greinke, and again, not even themselves, because that whole deal came together in about a 5 or 6 hour span, which is amazing when you consider the scope of a 6-year, $206.5 million deal coming together that quickly. But he was certainly their big prize of the offseason, but followed up, you know, close behind him was continuing to add the rotation with Shelby Miller. Getting him in the trade from the Braves, all of a sudden now your number one and number two guys in the rotation are new, and both quality pitchers, obviously. So that really was a boost to the rotation, and that was their main thing going into the offseason was, hey, it'd be great if they could beef up their rotation a little bit. Well, so they get one of the best pitchers in baseball and a young pitcher who's got tremendous upside as well.
So let's grade the different areas. Obviously, it's like from last year, you know, whatever time, maybe going into spring training or maybe how the team ended the season. Let's do that, how the team ended the season, and grade the rotation from then until now. I mean, this has to be a really easy one, but how would you say just on an A, B, C, D, F scale?
How much, based on how much they've improved or where they were at the end of last season?
Yeah,
I would say at the end of last season, their rotation was probably a C- at the end of last season, D+, and the way they've improved now, I mean, that's an A, to give them an A+, to add Zach Greinke and Shelby Miller to the top of the rotation. I think certainly that was a big thing for them.
So how about the bullpen? How much does Clipper's addition change that whole thing? I see the rest of the guys on here are names that we're pretty familiar with the Diamondbacks, but that one guy that might really give him a boost.
Yeah, I think they didn't really lose anybody that pitched late in games for them or that was significant. So you add a guy like Tyler Clippard and you don't subtract anybody, I almost have to give him an A just for that, because they didn't lose anybody of value, but also picked up a guy that could be very valuable for them late in games.
I want to talk about, just in general, your feeling on where the Rockies improved the most. And, I mean, I understand, like, where the Rockies are. You understand where the Rockies are. They're not looking to necessarily contend this year, but they're trying to build something. And I believe that the bullpen is something that will look a little different. What do you think?
Yeah, the bullpen looks totally different. In fact, I think the thing that's puzzling to a lot of the pundits out there is they built a bullpen as if this team is on the edge of going to the World Series. I mean, you're bringing in veteran relief types. Jason Mott, he is coming off injury, but really finished the season pretty strong last year before being shut down by the Chicago Cubs. He would have been a participant in the World Series. Chad Qualls added a whole lot to the Houston Astros bullpen. And then they go out and they get Jake McGee from the Tampa Bay Rays. Yes, they traded Corey Dickerson, but they had to trade an outfielder. And it is interesting that you go out and get one of the best left-handers in the game. And with Adam Ottavino also coming off his Tommy John surgery, and he could be ready by the second half of the year, this is the type of bullpen that a lot of teams would want to build if they think, hey, this bullpen could make a difference in getting us over the top. Now, you look at some other parts of the Rockies team, and you're like, gee, they look like they're a long ways away. But they have a bullpen that seems to be right there. All those guys are under control for the next two seasons. It's almost as if this bullpen is built for a two-year window to push into the playoffs or win the whole darn thing.
Okay, so, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I'm kind of looking at this, okay, so they know what they have, and they see what the kind of rotation they have, but they do have some young guys, and they're trying to make them into very solid Rockies starters, which we know has added challenges. So we know that the worst way to lose baseball games over and over and over again is when your bullpen blows it. So if your team has a lead in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, and then the bullpen blows it, that there's no better way to crush the morale than to do it that way. So I almost feel like they said, you know, we need to get a bullpen that's going to hold whatever leads we have, and that could have a positive effect on some of these young starters. And maybe they won't be complete head cases halfway through the season if they're, like, you know, 3-9. Am I, like, totally off on that, or is there something to that?
I think you're correct about it, although I will say the way that they operate is they believe, gee, if these starters are half decent and with the runs we could put up, maybe the bullpen can hold leads and we can contend. I mean, there really is that thought that they are building something for the future. If you look at the rotation, there's no way you could look at that and say, yeah, this is a rotation, we're going hard after it in 2016, because so many people even haven't pitched very much or they've been hurt, you know, and then there are also the prospects that are coming up. But part of it is, rather than just put up a sign saying, hey, fans, wait till the year after next, I think what they're trying to say is, if this starting rotation somehow pitches beyond its years, suddenly they can turn leads over to the bullpen. The problem in the past, especially the recent past, hasn't been the bullpen is blowing leads. The problem is there aren't any leads. The problem, like last season, is they would come out and get three runs in the first inning, two in the second, and suddenly they're behind 9-5 because the starting rotation was so bad. So if they can build a half-decent starting rotation and continue to score runs, then I think deep in their hopeful hearts, they're thinking, hey, this bullpen can hold leads.
Okay, so I was reading a column by our good friend Lyle Spencer, who is an MLB.com columnist and is also concentrates a lot on the West team. And he had a really interesting column about five pitchers from the NL West that could be difference makers for their team. And he had a Rocky pitcher that we really haven't talked about a whole lot, mainly because he hasn't pitched a whole lot. But he sees Tyler Chatwood as being somebody who could end up having a little bit of maybe a bounce-back season, if you want to call it. What did you think about that, and what do you think about Chatwood in general?
Well, you know, Lyle was covering the Anaheim Angels when Chatwood came up with them, and he saw a very athletic pitcher, a guy who isn't bothered by a whole lot. Now, at times he's got him in trouble because he's tried to pitch through things, and he's coming off of a Tommy John surgery. But if you look at his numbers, he has put up excellent numbers at Coors Field, and has pitched very, he pitched very well for the year and a half that he was available to the Rockies. But when he blew out his elbow early in the 2014 season, you haven't seen him since. But they intentionally took a little bit longer of a rehab period with him because he had Tommy John surgery at 16. So they want to make sure that this elbow is going to hold up. If he's back in there and pitching well and doesn't get hurt, and more important, and I've talked to him about this, doesn't hide an injury that blows up into something else, then, yeah, he could be a very effective pitcher. You've got Jorge De La Rosa, who's the best pitcher in Rockies history at Coors Field. He's pitched there longer, won more games, and I'm sure that when he's done, science is going to want to take apart his arm and body and figure out how he did it. But if Chatwood becomes that type of guy from the right side, then they've got something special in their rotation. Like I say, like we all say, we don't know because he's coming off of a Tommy John surgery, and he had one at 16 and then one in his 20s, and there's almost no history of that right now. So we'll see what happens. But could Chatwood make a difference? Certainly. And the other thing that always helps at Coors Field, he's a very good offensive player. I mean, he's the type of guy who could play center field in the major leagues, and he can run and hit. And, hey, at Coors Field, if you give up some runs pitching, maybe you could get some back hitting.
Okay, so let's look at the different elements of the team. So let's start with the rotation. So think about the rotation as it ended the season in 2015. And if you could put a grade on it based on progress of some of the starters, there's not really been any additions. But how would you grade the rotation like entering this season compared to the end of last season?
At best, incomplete. I mean, you look at this, you look at this rotation, and Jorge De La Rosa, you know what you have in him. Chad Bettis really came on during the season last season, and they believe that this guy can be something in their starting rotation. They got away from an experiment with him in the bullpen, and he pitched very well for them. After that, what are you going to get? Jordan Lyles has been injured the last 2 years there, and when he was pitching, you didn't see the consistency, but you saw some good things, like he threw a lot of strikes, didn't walk people, but, you know, there were times when he was hittable also. You've got Tyler Chatwood that we just talked about. Then you've got John Gray. I mean, here's a guy who's barely pitched in the major leagues, and he's there for a Rockies pitcher very quickly. You've got Chris Rusin, who came over from the Cubs. They picked him up at the end of the previous season. He actually threw a complete game shutout last year, one of only, I think it's 13 in the history of Coors Field for a Rockies pitcher, but he also had some awful outings. And Eddie Butler, you know, what are you going to get from him? He struggled since coming up to the major leagues. Tyler Matzek, he did quite well at the end of 2014. Then in 2015, he completely lost the strike zone and dealt with some performance anxiety issues. Well, he comes back next season. David Hale, a guy from Princeton University, actually pitched quite well for the Atlanta Braves in a starting and relief role. He was hurt most of last season and also trying to correct issues with his delivery. So what are you going to get from these guys? We'll see in spring training, but there is no way to predict it simply because they have a lot of parts and they have some other younger prospect types. But what are they going to do just getting into the majors, and what are they going to do at Coors Field?